There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away. So it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. So if you're looking for any type of batteries, whether it's for your truck, your car, your trail cameras, your rangefinder, stop into a local Interstate Batteries retail location. There are thousands upon thousands of them all over the United States. Talk with a battery specialist and get the batteries that you need to go on with your life. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting, the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear. This week we have Josh Kaywood, James Brandenburg, the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. We talk about that organization. We even dig a little bit into the nitty-gritty. Fun conversation with these guys. You're going to enjoy it. Our partners, W Hunting Supply. They're ready for you. They're ready for your call. They're ready for your order for whatever you need when it comes to dog-related stuff. It's getting to be winter time, and that's when a lot of hound-related, dog-related activities are taking place. Like us, we're about to start squirrel hunting and coon hunting a lot. W, they're one of the biggest distributors for Garmin in the country. They have the new Garmin Alpha 200i, and they have everything that you need for any hound or dog related activity. Check out our friends Buddy Woodbury and his team at W Hunting Supply. There's still several muzzleloader seasons going on right now and will continue to go on throughout the rest of the year. If you're looking for a muzzleloader, check out CVA Muzzleloaders. They're making the best muzzleloaders on the market. What I like most about my CVA Acura mountain rifle is that it's a breakover gun with a removable breech plug that you don't need a tool to remove. You're in the field, you need to check and see if your gun's loaded. You're in the field and you need to reload. Maybe you feel like your powder got wet. That happened to me the other day. I was in a torrential downpour for several hours with a muzzleloader. The next time I hunted, I was fearful that the powder would be wet. So I removed the breech plug by hand in the field. Turns out, the powder was not wet. It was perfectly dry. The gun would have fired perfectly. But it gave me peace of mind to know that the powder was dry. CVA, they have an incredible guarantee on all their guns. Check them out. Northwoods Bear Products. that most of the bear baiting seasons are over right now, even though I have one time baited bears in November here in Arkansas. But if you're getting ready for spring, whatever you're doing, Northwoods Bear Products, they make the highest quality commercial bear scent that you could use. It makes your scents extremely potent, makes your baits loud, and it draws in more bears than any natural food could. Check out our buddies at Northwoods Bear Products. Josh Kaywood. We've got Josh Kaywood here to my northeast here. Need to get out my compass. James Brandenburg here to my right. What are you guys doing, James? Why are you at the global headquarters?
Oh, we wanted to mess up your deer hunting for the day.
Well, you did that. Hey, Josh is with, you work full time for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Yeah, and then James, you're the Arkansas chapter chair of the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers.
Yep.
So, yeah, so I just want to, Josh, this is a unique situation in the podcast because I hardly know you at all.
Yeah.
And we were standing outside the door, and I was like, don't tell me anything about yourself. Don't tell me where you're from. Don't tell me, because I wanted to do it here. So this is a good way to get to know who you are, because you work full-time for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers.
Yes, sir. So I'm the Southeast Chapter Coordinator for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. So I cover Arkansas, Tennessee, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and then what's left of the Southeast chapter now, which is Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana.
So before I ask you like what you do, give just a general overview of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers.
Yeah, the way I like to think about it is we're a nonprofit focused on preserving public land and access for sportsmen and sportswomen. So we want to make sure that folks have a place to go hunt and fish, and that there's ample habitat to support the game and fish that they're pursuing.
Yeah. So access.
Access is huge.
That's your main focus.
Yes, sir.
Main focus. Yeah, that's going to come up later in our conversation, I have a feeling, mm-hmm. because all these big national groups have focuses.
Yep.
There's and all of them are so important and critical for this big picture that we're really all trying to achieve, which I think is long-term, mm-hmm. high-quality hunting and fishing access for generations to come.
Yep.
I mean, sustainable, long-term. That's what Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation wants. I think that's what BHA wants. Mm-hmm. I think that's what SCI wants. I think that's what Boone and Crockett wants. That's what National Wild Turkey Federation wants.
Absolutely.
Yeah, everybody's got their own place.
Yep.
Hold that thought in your mind, because we're going to come back to that.
Got it.
Yep. But so how long have you been working for BHA?
About 3 years now. So,
3 years.
Yeah. I was the chapter chair and one of the original founding members of the Southeast chapter. And the time came up to jump on board, and I said, yeah, I'd love to be the chapter coordinator. And
so the job just came available.
Yep.
On BHA.com.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. That's not their
website. No, it's literally on backcountryhunters.org. But yeah, I mean, you know, so old Toss Doublefield sent an email out saying that they were looking for
a full-time position.
Yep. And I applied just randomly. I just became obsessed with the mission. And was working in healthcare and said, you know what, maybe I could make a switch.
That was going to be my next question. What were you doing before that?
Yeah, so I was in, I was at a healthcare consulting group that kind of did large population market research. So okay. Kind of like impacts on.
Sounds thrilling.
It was actually super interesting, but it wasn't as cool as what I'm doing
now. I'm kidding. It actually does sound interesting.
If you like to study stuff, you know, I guess it would be interesting.
Yeah.
If you like to hunt and fish, maybe not.
Yeah.
So where do you live now?
I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Is that where you're from?
No, I'm from like just outside of Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And I'm kind of like I'm kind of a mutt of the South. So I've lived in West Tennessee. I've lived in kind of North Georgia, Mississippi. So I'm kind of
okay
all over the place.
What took you to all those different places?
Just school, like growing jobs, up? You know.
Okay,
just moving around for different things here and there, and just falling in love with the South, and specifically for what I would consider the Deep South.
Yeah. So what? Why did you have to move to Chattanooga?
Job.
I mean, you needed to be right there.
I got recruited to help start a healthcare technology company.
Okay, so BHA didn't move you to Chattanooga.
No. So I got recruited.
And so you were just there, and you were able to stay there.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. There's pretty good hunting and fishing there around Chattanooga?
Yeah. There's a tremendous amount of public land all around. We got Cherokee National Forest, Chattahoochee National Forest, Nantahala. My backyard basically backs up to a big state forest, 24,000 acres.
What country song has made Chattanooga like an iconic southern city? It's ringing in my head.
I think it's an old jazz song, the Chattanooga Choo Choo, or kind of like
Just trying to clear this up in my mind. That's all I could think about for just a minute there, which is totally irrelevant. But okay, so what kind of hunting do you do?
My main thing is waterfowl hunting.
Really?
So I picked that up in Mississippi, and I basically spend December and January in Mississippi.
Mississippi.
The Delta. So kind of northwest Mississippi.
Hey, you said you love the Deep South.
Yes.
Okay. People that meet me that are from like anywhere north of here think that I live in the Deep South.
Right.
No. I do not.
Yeah.
I do enjoy being from the South and like take pride in that I live in the South because we do, don't we, James?
Yeah, for sure.
But we don't live in the Deep South.
No.
This is upland Southern culture. That would be the technical description of the Ozarks, the Appalachians, the Washtenaws, Highland Southern culture. It's very different than what I think you're talking about.
Yep.
Deep South, because Deep South stuff would be
a cultural shift,
and it would all have to do with the geographic features of the region.
Sure.
I mean, like in Arkansas, there would be a very, very distinct divide. Yeah, I mean, like you could, like your 7-year-old could be like, okay, now we're in the Deep South.
You can tell. You can tell the moment you drive down basically a hill.
Yep.
Your stomach drops out, and then you are in the Deep South.
Yeah.
And everything changes.
It would be categorized by agriculture, flatlands, lowland country, big rivers, Mississippi Delta, and there's a lot of other big rivers beside the Mississippi. But
sure.
What draws you said you like that. What is it? Is it the waterfowl hunting?
It's the waterfowl hunting. It's the culture. It's the food. It's the community. It's the slower pace of life. It's all of those things. I mean, being an obsessive waterfowler doesn't hurt to fall in love with that. But listen, I love the South. I live in what would basically be considered the Appalachians now, or Appalachians. Okay. You know, people get mad about how people say that. But
I'm still undecided.
Yeah.
On what I'm comfortable with saying Appalachian. Because when I was over there, I had a couple of guys that should know tell me to say Appalachian.
Yeah.
But then I heard them say it, and they didn't say it like that.
Hmm.
So anyway.
It's a point of controversy.
It is. It is.
But yeah, man, I do, and I would say like you definitely have the Deep South here in Arkansas, right? And that probably starts somewhere in the Delta. I mean, I think Little Rock would be definitely like a hard starting point for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Arkansas would be like if Arkansas were a square, it would, you know, if you drew a line from the northeast corner to the southwest corner of that square. For the most part, everything in the southeast side of Arkansas would be in the southeast section of that square would be heavily influenced by Mississippi River Delta stuff, agriculture, you know, big timber, which would be vastly different than where we're at right here in the Ozarks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever, your most exposure would have been hunting with over in Brinkley with Jonathan, is that right? Have you ever spent any time down there?
Not really. I mean, I've driven through there a few times, but haven't spent a lot of time over there. So people that I've gotten to know from that side of the state, though, I just love their passion for where they live. It's just like up here. Like, we're all proud to live in the mountains, and they're all proud to live in the Delta. And I think if people have pride in where they live, they take care of it, they fight for it. And I'm really looking forward to spending more time over there in this role with BHA that I have, and just getting to know more about how things work over there and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So yeah. I bought waders, like actual duck waders for this year. So like last year I was just duck hunting in my fishing waders. This year I've actually got
real duck waders.
Real duck waders. Yeah.
That's a big move. That's a big step, man.
I know. I'm not sure if I'm ready for it.
Yeah. Josh, are you married?
I am. Yep.
Have children or anything?
Yes, sir. I got a year and a half year old daughter, and then I got a boy on the way.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
In fact, he mentioned that your dog's name is Timber, and I'm thinking about naming my son Timber.
So. Okay. Well, scratch that from the podcast so his wife doesn't hear that. My son's name is Bear, and like 15% of the people that I meet that don't know me, mm-hmm. they're like, man, I had a dog named Bear. And I'm like, thanks, man. And turns out I actually had a dog named Bear, too, when I was young. I don't tell people that, though.
Did you tell Misty that?
No, I honestly don't know that ever did because it was such a it's a dog that I think I remember through my father because I think I was too young to actually remember the dog. Yeah, okay. I think there's pictures of the dog.
Okay.
So I don't really think I have real memories of Bear the dog. So that doesn't count. Okay. Really. Yeah. That's why it's not in my like real functional memory.
You get a pass.
Yeah. So I was trying to get a little background there to tell me what you do on like a day-to-day basis with BHA.
Yeah. My job is basically to facilitate anything that any of my chapter boards are working on. So that could be kind of punching out an email for them so that they can send that out to their chapter to working on various issues at like a state or federal level with the state legislator, U.S. legislator.
So how many chapters are there in the Southeast that you kind of manage?
I manage seven.
Seven. Where are they at?
Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Arkansas, and then the Southeast chapter would be Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool. So that's a lot of work, huh?
Yeah, it's getting to be. It started off as a cush job. I was able to go hunting and fishing whenever I wanted, and now I'm sitting in Arkansas instead of my deer blind.
We keep picking fights for him to help us out with.
Yeah. Well, so when I first became familiar with BHA and James as well, you know, one thing I think James and I have talked about is sometimes in this part of the world, there seems to be less public land issues or there would seem mm-hmm. to be on the surface anyway, because some of the stuff out west is really kind of headline dominating, in your face, big moves, you know, like some state wanting to sell off a couple hundred thousand acres of public land or something, or some senator saying they're going to do this or that. We don't have as much of that here.
Mm-mm.
So tell me some of the issues going on. I guess in the Southeast, that would be a good starting point, or even why you're here today.
For sure. So, I'll end on why I'm here today, but I guess one big thing would be like in Louisiana, you're seeing kind of a access to the water being taken away from the public, specifically the marsh and the coast there. And there's all sorts of tricky reasons as to why that's happening, but that's, you know, a really, really massive amount of kind of public
space. What do you
mean
by that? Like literally like
you cannot drive a boat
ramps.
You cannot drive a boat on what would in all intents and purposes at this point be considered the ocean, because you are on somebody's property, because the water bottom, most of the times on the coast, you would like an oil company would own the bottom. Well, the mineral rights are attached to the surface in Louisiana. So surface rights, and that is there for a variety of reasons. But, the big problem with that is we're losing a tremendous amount of the marsh in Louisiana. It's like, you know, the statistic is like a football field every 90 minutes of marshland. And
that,
so
that are being lost to access.
No, that marsh grass is disappearing.
Okay, it's so we're away. Not we're and, talking about an environmental issue.
Yeah,
here.
And then that is now just water. So, okay. So what okay. used to be kind of dry ground at one point is now water, and you theoretically would not be able to drive a boat over that water.
Because it's still okay. technically private.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah,
it's still private. Like, okay. It'd be like up here, like when they flooded the land to make Beaver Lake, it's like the guy who used to own the bottom of the river there coming back and saying, hey, you can't drive your bass boat over this because I own the bottom of the lake.
It would be like looking at your Onyx maps and seeing the property line
in the water
being here, but the water is encroaching. I mean, like
it's completely taken over. I mean, that land has disappeared.
Wow.
And so
the property owners are saying, hey, we own out, you know, 100 yards out into that body of water.
Oh no, they're like 10 miles.
Oh wow.
To a point where you could take,
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you could take like a, you know, a center console with two 225s on the back of it and drive as fast as you can for an hour and be on private land.
So at one point in memorable history, that would have been dry ground.
Last year.
So what's happening with that? Just sea level rise?
It's a variety of things. So one would argue that sea level rise is contributing to that. Another problem is you have subsidence, so the land itself is actually sinking.
Okay, I was about to make a joke, and I wasn't going to do it. Yeah. Louisiana is sinking, Louisiana, but it's not a joke.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's not a joke. And then they dug oil canals, or not oil canals, but canals to get the oil container ships into port more effectively, and they dug those in a straight line. And so all these hurricanes you're seeing, well, the storm surge pushes that water down those canals, and it just kills that marsh grass, floods it, and that marsh grass doesn't have the time or the ability to grow back. They don't have the ability to grow back because we took the Mississippi River and we levied it off. Before we levied off that river, it used to be like you let a garden hose loose and it would just kind of shift and spray all over the place and take all that sediment from, you know, basically Canada all the way down, and it would disperse it into the Gulf of Mexico there, and that's what kept that marsh grass alive. We don't have that anymore.
I see, because now we've contained the river so tight it doesn't do its natural flood stage and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you think about, like, the levying of the Mississippi River, it seems like, oh, well, that's been going on for forever, but it's been going on for maybe 100 years.
Right.
Which, when you think about geologic time...
Mm-hmm. Not too long. Yeah.
I mean, that's like a millisect of time. And so you think about the... I was not aware of these issues. Huh?
Yeah.
So what's BHA doing with stuff like that?
We are trying to find a solution that fits all the parties. Like
that you can still go fishing up on the bank?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, like drive a boat into
some of
that. Yeah, so
you can drive a boat, so you can go out there and duck hunt, so you can fish. I mean, there's all sorts of people that have interests, but, you know, we don't want people to lose their rights to their minerals. Obviously, that's a big oil-producing part of the country and other things as well.
Yeah.
But it's it's incredibly controversial in the state, and we're just trying to help. We're trying to play a facilitator role to bring all those different parties together to find a solution that works.
Yeah,
and so that the common guy can still take his son fishing.
There you go. So what other issues would there be? And that's a great example of that I would not have really been aware of. That shows the kind of stuff that you guys are working in.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing things in Florida. We've commented on trying to get the hunting of black bear in Florida, you know, back. So our chapter down there is kind of slowly poking around on that and beginning to build the right relationships. And hopefully that's something we'll see here in the near-term future. Then most recently here, I'm in Arkansas working on this pine tree research station issue.
Yeah.
And that's been a very exciting project for us, and it's really helped out the Arkansas chapter here.
Yeah. So we did a whole podcast, James and I did, on that. But give me like a 25-second synopsis for someone who hadn't heard about that.
Yep. The University of Arkansas owns 11,850 acres over in eastern Arkansas. It's a research station they bought from the Forest Service back in the 60s. It's been managed. It's supposed to remain open for public use. The land is supposed to remain used for the public.
Right.
They've allowed hunting and fishing on that for a long time.
Like 70 years.
It's not 70 years, but quite a long time.
Okay.
And they have a contract in place to sell that land to a private entity, some of it, 6,300 acres. That portion would cease to be in public use, which is a violation of the deed.
The original deed.
Yep. And so, what we're working on that is trying to find a solution that keeps that land public. Like we've talked about, if the university needs to sell that land to fund other priorities, let's find another way to make that happen that keeps that land public.
Yeah.
It was purchased by the federal government during the Depression in order to conserve the land, to rehabilitate farmland that had been degraded just because it was marginal to start off with. And it's now great wildlife habitat.
Yeah.
And we want to see it stay that way and available to the public, as it has been public land now for close to 90 years.
Wow.
You know, 80 to 85 years it's been public land. So we want to stay that
way. So you guys are advocating for a solution to not sell that land.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or someone buy it that
stays public.
That it stays public.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's what puts me in the seat today. But
so you're in Arkansas dealing with some of that stuff.
Yep. Yep.
Good.
Excited to be here.
Good. Well, great. Anybody that's been paying much attention to BHA, it blew my mind. When I first started hearing about BHA, I went and joined the organization, got involved with them, and then all of a sudden I started getting private messages from a few people saying, hey, don't you know that BHA is – and I mean, I'm just going to say it because it's on the internet, so we might as well say it because we're going to talk about why – I mean, to me it's just a ridiculous kind of conspiracy theory, and I've got some data because I promise you I've scrutinized this organization and I have tried to find somebody that could actually tell me why these terrible things were true. But I mean, people saying that BHA was a green decoy?
Green decoy.
So a green decoy, for someone who wouldn't understand the analogy, a green decoy would be a left-wing environmental group that would cloak itself as a hunter, a sportsman-led group that would try to like woo all these sportsmen and come in as like the hunter kid and then turn the table at some point or in the back room begin to navigate legislation and stuff in the favor of anti-hunting sentiment.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like we're trying to hide that people say that.
No.
Because people do. Yeah. And it's do you guys have any ideas on where or why some of this would have come up?
Well, I mean, we've made enemies. We've made people mad, and some of those folks have a vested interest in creating a narrative to weaken us. And that, you know, there's public relation groups that have, you know, been commissioned to write those articles about us and create that narrative. And that's, you know, I think somewhat public, pretty public knowledge to like the BHA, like hardcore dudes. So we know that some of that has happened. That actually took place, I don't know, maybe like 5 years ago before I came on to BHA, that whole kind of narrative creation thing. But we've been dealing with it ever since. It's one of those things that kind of lives on the internet. In fact, when I told my dad I was moving my career to BHA, he like Googled and found that. He was like, well, I think they're a bunch of liberal anti-hunting, you know?
Good. Your dad said that, huh?
And I was like, no, I don't think so, man. I mean, yeah, you just hang out with some of these guys. I mean, hang out with the guys that work at BHA. And I mean, you know, Ty Stubblefield.
Yeah.
That dude kills a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And one of our main initiatives is an R3 program, which is we want to create more hunters.
Yeah.
I don't see that being too, you know, anti-hunting friendly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I went to the BHA rendezvous 3 years ago. And I mean, if you could go to that rendezvous and say that this was an anti-hunting group, you'd I don't know. You'd have to have a pretty strong warp on what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I think BHA has done things different.
Yep.
I mean, like, for instance, at that BHA, and this is a great thing to bring up. Obviously, this is all public knowledge. They had Yvonne Chouinard
yep.
speaking there.
Yep.
Man, when I saw the founder of Patagonia, a multi-billion dollar, massive global player in the outdoor industry,
mm-hmm.
sitting in front of 1,500 hunters, saying that he was on our side,
mm-hmm.
I was like, this is good.
Yeah. No,
this is the guy you want on your team. I came back from that rendezvous after I made a video about it, and I had people email me and say, Clay, you are the representative of bear hunters across this country. I cannot believe that you would put your stamp of approval on Yvonne Chouinard. He said, do you not know? I mean, this is almost word for word. I mean, it's like branded in my mind what this guy said. He said, do you not know that Yvonne Chouinard, am I saying his name?
Chouinard.
Chouinard is not for delisting Yellowstone grizzlies. It doesn't surprise me that Chouinard doesn't want. I mean, he is not totally on our page.
No,
right.
We're not totally on his page, but BHA has a good way of coming together to work with people that we do have some common ground with.
Yep.
And that spooks people that are of a mindset of polarization, like them and us.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be in that camp in certain places. I'm not saying, I mean, there's some places you can't compromise.
Right.
Like, so I'm not saying that we need to make friends with, you know, somebody that's going to hurt us.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy just was like, Clay, you're betraying predator hunting. Yeah. By saying that Yvonne Chouinard is a friend of ours. And I just fundamentally disagree with that.
Yeah. No, listen, I do too. And I know a few of the folks inside of Patagonia. I've done some stuff with them. The main guy for all the retail stores in the East, he is an ex-moose hunting guide in Maine. I mean, so like inside of Patagonia, there's disagreements, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, we can agree on 80%, disagree on 20%. And if we can advance, you know, public land hunting, like I'm willing to take that risk.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big thing. I heard, so there was a podcast, a well-known podcast, and the host had a guy on that was like kind of a BHA guy that had a lot of background in why BHA was like this anti-hunting group.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard that this was happening, I went to that podcast and was like, great, here we go. Now I'm going to be able to call James and say, I told you, James.
Get me out of here.
And I listened to that podcast, and I did not – I mean, everything that was said was speculative.
Yep.
I mean, there was – I was shocked that there was nothing, in my opinion, of deep substance. And there's all this stuff about funding.
Yep.
I mean, I could nerd out about it all. People can do their own research. But, you know, there's this thing that, you know, they get money from the Wilberforce Foundation. Mm. Well, I'll tell you what. You can go look up Wilberforce Foundation, and you'll find that they give money to a whole bunch of people.
Yep.
They give money to a bunch of people that we probably don't agree with at all.
Mm-hmm.
But they also give a bunch of money to people that we do agree with.
Absolutely.
And BHA is not entirely funded by the Wilberforce Foundation.
Small percentage.
And I mean, pretty much that was the main thing is they were saying, follow the money. These guys mm-hmm. are getting money from anti-hunting groups.
Yep.
And you go and look, you can do research and find out all the money that Wilberforce dishes out. There's a bunch of other conservation groups that get money from them.
Yep.
If they called me tomorrow and said, Clay, we want to give Bear Hunting Magazine some money, I would listen to them. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like...
ask them what kind of strings are attached to it, and then you go from there. I mean, the polarization thing is what just blows me away. It's like, we all got to lock arms and march together, all agreeing on every single thing, and that's not the way the world works. I mean, Clay, that the 12 disciples couldn't all agree on everything.
Yeah.
I mean, we need diversity of opinions. Yeah. We need diversity of funding. We need diversity of goals. This is what makes us America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just kind of curious. I would like to hear somebody say what their motivations are for trying to tear BHA down.
Right.
Oh, like, yeah, there's motivations for sure. I don't want to like speculate on that, but those speculations aren't hard to make.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge fan of that podcast and I run all that dude's gear. So like I said earlier, like if we're an anti-hunting organization, we're doing it wrong.
Hey, well, he's my friend too.
Yeah.
He had Land and Ryan on too. Yep. Ryan. Or who did he have? He had Lantani.
Lantani and Ryan Bussey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ryan Bussey on there.
From Kimber. And he used to be our chair. He's no longer the chair of our North American board. Okay. But
I appreciated that he did that because he had a podcast about, you know, all the alternative ideas about BHA, mm-hmm. and then he had these guys on.
He did a great job.
Yeah, I commend him for that. To me, this is really important because mm-hmm. you know, like somebody isn't familiar with BHA, and they hear this, it all sounds great, and then the first time they get a whiff of something, it kind of spooks them. That's the way it's happened with some of my friends,
right?
And that's what would have happened with me if I hadn't dug a little bit deeper,
right?
And I want to give here's the other thing that specifically people have talked to me about because of my background and history, mm-hmm. is people have said they're anti-predator hunting. Okay, that's what they've said to me. Mm-hmm. BHA is anti-predator hunting. Mm. Well, many things. I have seen multiple places where BHA has advocated for bear hunting. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just brought it up a minute ago. The chapter in Florida, they were the guys that contacted me and got me on a podcast down in Florida. Mm-hmm. BHA guys hooked me up with some legitimate Florida-wide fishing hunting podcast, mm-hmm. got me on that. BHA is, now I know there's lots of great groups, SCI, Sportsman's Alliance, that are working on this New Jersey thing too. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that BHA is the only one working.
Right.
But BHA they wrote an article, had a petition, standing against this governor that has said he's going to shut down bear hunting in New Jersey, mm-hmm. going against science, going against all the data, going against all the biologists. And, BHA standing there saying, hey, we're fighting for a bear hunt.
Mm-hmm.
I had people, let me get to my personal story. So during the time when I was still, and I'm just going to be real open here because I got nothing to hide about it. When I wasn't on the fence at all about BHA, but I met Hal Herring.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I honestly, going to meet Hal, I went to spend a couple of days with him, and I knew very little about him. I just knew he worked for BHA and did their podcast and was kind of like a pretty big voice for BHA.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go over there to be on his podcast. Like that was not, I mean, that wasn't the only reason that I went. But when I went there, I mean, I don't know if y'all have heard of it, but I publish a magazine called Bear Hunting Magazine.
I've heard of it.
And I am pro predator hunting, pro mountain lion hunting, mm-hmm. you know, all within the bounds of science and such.
Sure.
And Hal Herring told me, he said that he talked to some of the head leaders at BHA and told them he was going to be in camp with me. And they said, get Clay on the podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he told me.
What I mean, but it was to get you on the podcast and get you in a gotcha moment, right? Yeah. They were trying to trap you.
Exactly.
Trying to decoy you in.
Yeah, yeah. So all I was saying, if they're an anti-hunting, anti-predator group, they're doing a bad job because But okay, here's the thing though. They're doing a bad job with that because they're doing so much, I think. I mean, pro all these things we're talking about. But here's the thing is that when I made a post the other day about BHA and the New Jersey petition, mm-hmm. there was a guy on there and you said something to him, James, that said, well, I wonder why the national BHA isn't saying something.
Yep.
And he was clearly saying that, you know, there was some there was some reason why National wasn't getting on. And it was, and I got on there and said, man, all these different groups have different lanes. I said, you know, BHA primarily does access, land access. Yep. That's the main thing.
That's our bread and butter.
BHA is not.
We're also small, right? So it's hard for us to get outside of that lane and be effective. And when we do get outside of our lane, that can bog us down and detract from our main mission, right? So
So it's business. It's staying on mission.
Yep.
And no, go ahead.
Oh, I think you're on the right path, and at the end of the day too, one of the reasons why, you know, you might not see something out of the North American organization as a whole is our job is to back our chapters, right? So we back the work that our chapters are doing. We're led from the ground up. Yeah. We're not a top down organization. Our guys go and pick the fights or girls. And whenever they got something that they want to engage in on something like, you know, in Florida or New Jersey, which I'm not terribly familiar with, I apologize. But, you know, my job at that point is, all right, let's make this happen. Let's put in the work, let's organize, and you guys now have all of our resources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
And James, you made a great point. What was that?
Yeah. My point is that as a chapter leader, that's amazingly empowering to me to know that I'm here on the ground in this state, and our members here in this state, if they have an issue that's important to them, it's important then to our national organization. It's empowering in so many ways as chapter leaders to be able to pick those fights and not have it dictated to us that we need to get on board with this or get on board with that. Right. Are there national issues that we all work together on? Yes. Great American Outdoors Act, Land and Water Conservation Fund, these big national things, yes.
Well, and the point that you made to me that was I thought was so strong, and to this guy that made that comment, was that local issues are handled locally.
Right.
National issues are handled nationally.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, this was a statewide issue in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, I mean, like structurally, the organization is not designed for BHA National.
Right.
I mean, just the way it's just lined up.
Right.
It's lined up so that the BHA New Jersey is fighting that fight. And obviously, that's been sent out nationally, and there's been support coming in nationally from that.
We'll do our best to promote it. You know, that's our job. And
so it wasn't a conspiracy to actually make bear hunting go away in New Jersey? Is that what you're telling me?
Not that I know.
That was my comment. That was my comment to the guy that made the question. I said, it sounds to me like you're upset at BHA for taking a stance, public stance, against ending a bear hunt, saying we're pro bear hunting. Sounds to me like you're mad at them for that, and
mad at the method rather than,
I mean, just know. It didn't make sense. Anyway, I realize I am going on and on about this, and y'all didn't come here to talk about this, but I think it's a major issue. I think it's a fly in the ointment. And man, I'm not sitting here saying that. I mean, I am equally as, I mean, I love Sportsman's Alliance. I love SCI.
Sure.
Like, there's a ton of groups that I'm passionate about that if I had a good connection to, would probably be sitting here too.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, it's not like you have to be, like, if you're a BHA guy, then that's all you are.
No.
That's what people feel like. That's what I feel like people.
Yeah.
If you identify yourself at all with an organization, then that's like...
Well, we can't get our identities so wrapped up in each one of these little groups. You know, people get so wrapped up in whatever the label is that they want to put on themselves. And I love BHA. I work hard for BHA. I love the diversity of opinions and people and things that we can do that are focused. I mean, it's diverse, but it's focused in a specific lane. And we were literally today amongst my board members talking about how blessed we feel to have found each other to work together with. I'm sure there's other organizations that have those exact same things.
Yeah.
But we weren't talking about, you know, the how we were going to take down hunting and fishing. We were talking about, we found people who like to hunt and fish, the means or the places, the ideals that we all hold common, and we were so happy to find a place where we could do that work.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we like to do. Man, if you like to, if your deal is cold water fishing for wild and native trout, Trout Unlimited, it whatever it is. But just because you're a member of that one group, you don't have to throw rocks at all the other ones either. And that's what I'm so glad that I think is just different amongst the people that I work with in BHA.
Yeah.
And you know, we can kind of get focused on these loud kind of trolls, you know, that are talking smack, but they're a small percentage, right?
Yeah.
I think most people out there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that this is like such a, in my mind anyway, it's a big thing, because I just hear it and I'm sensitive to it. But
it's a big thing in the South, man. I mean, we've been dealing with it since day one.
Okay, here's the other thing I want to like publicly acknowledge is that the other reason that people think or could think that BHA is some you know left wing anti hunting group is BHA is, and I'm going to say the E word. Do y'all know what the E word is? Environmental.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and that's what's bizarre about the modern divides inside of politics. Mm-hmm. That, you know, if you're a hunter and fisherman, you know, you're just the way that the politics line up to be on this side of the aisle means that you are not an environmentalist.
Right.
You know, so it's like, but we are hunters, and I mean, like we our passion is wild places, mm-hmm. going to those wild places, enjoying those wild places. Like, we actually ought to be the biggest advocates for wild places, which, if we could just call it that, advocates for wild places, and mm-hmm. not environmentalists, mm-hmm. you know, the marketing, the stigma, and obviously, so. Some people are threatened by that. They're like, this is a radical environmental group that's wanting to shut down the whole place. Mm. I mean, and that's not true.
No.
I mean, from what I've seen from national decisions that have been made, there are some places where things should be shut down.
Yeah.
Like the Pebble Mine up in Alaska.
Pebble Mine, Bristol
Bay.
Man,
shut it down.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure Trump said this. Well, I don't want to get into that. Donald Trump Jr. was against the Pebble Mine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know mm-hmm. that.
Yep.
But there's other places where BHA would absolutely be like, I mean, talking to Hal Herring, I mean, he's one of the most functional, like, real guys you'll ever talk to. He has his whole background is in forestry.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, he's like, man, we got to cut this timber.
Right.
Yep. I mean, like, you know, land use practices that are sustainable, mm-hmm. that are good for wildlife, that are good for the economy too.
Yep.
So it's not just this blanket, you know,
I think if anything, Clay, it's a more holistic approach that we have. Like, we're not against resource extraction. We're not against private land, even.
We're not against burning, prescribed fire. I mean, we're pro prescribed fire in parts of the country and against prescribed fire in other parts of the country, purely based on, you know, the forest management plans, the science there that support it. And,
right.
you know, wherever the science points us is where we want to go.
Right.
Because that's what's going to be the best for the wildlife and the habitat.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple.
So it's a real easy narrative for someone to just get turned off of. They're just like, yep, BHA is a left-wing radical environmental group. Yep. And it's just, I have looked and looked and looked, and I just haven't seen that yet.
Well, I wouldn't be working there if it was that. I can promise you that.
Well, and I wouldn't have you guys here if it was, I mean, really, I've scrutinized over this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, BHA is one of the fastest growing sportsmen's groups in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's become an influential group. And what I like about BHA is the type of people that are being recruited.
Yep.
Or just the type of people that I see that are BHA guys are they're motivated. They're They're guys that are, a lot of them are even new hunters.
Sure.
Yeah.
A lot of them are veteran hunters. I mean, but some new hunters.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just an energetic, motivated, good group. And there's, you know, all these big groups have great constituencies, you know.
Absolutely.
National Wild Turkey Federation, Rocky Mountain Elk. I mean, all these guys have great groups. But
yeah. And you know, just to kind of touch, I have a little bit of notes, but I mean, you know, we got 40,000 plus members.
Right.
Of that, 28% are independents, 23% are Republicans, and 6% are libertarians.
Okay.
We're
now, break that down again. I was listening for the
28% independent, 23% Republican, 6% libertarian, and I forgot to write the Democrat number. Whoops. But it's like the Democrat number was like in the 20% too. Okay. So, I mean, that's one of the cool things about our membership is like, man,
conspiracy.
We are.
He forgot to write the Democrat number.
I know.
Well, that would be a pro. I'd be on the side that
you just washed the whole our whole conversation down the tubes by that. I'm kidding.
But it's that is to me like kind of the cool thing about our makeup is like we are super super diverse in our political makeup.
Yeah,
and we skew pretty young. You know, like a massive percent. We're 40 and younger, which is in the conservation world very rare. You know,
I'm an old guy for BHA at 46. I'm starting to feel my age, you know.
Yeah.
So,
Clay,
I think we could kind of wrap this part of it up just by describing our membership a little bit more. It's people who are motivated to learn more about hunting, to share that. There's a lot of camaraderie that comes with that. Yeah, I mean, we take our knocks for. You know, another thing that people say is, you know, all they want to do is get together and drink beer and slap each other on the back.
Yeah.
I can tell you that there is definitely occasion for that, but I have seen a lot of just what I would term fraternity with a lowercase f, just camaraderie and fellowship. Sharing of success and however you choose to define what that success is. It's not going to be the group for everybody, but it is a group of people who are interested in action, and we make it possible for people to operate fairly independently, but with support in their local area. So if you live in Paris, Arkansas, and you want to do a cleanup in your area, and you're a BHA member, man, we will help you out with that. Like, we will make connections for you. We'll help you promote it. If you need help with an access issue in your area, we will help you out with that. And that, I think, is why I'm a part of it. It's because it's people of action. Not to say that other groups aren't also action oriented, but I think we make that accessible for people who otherwise don't have access to it.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're very much an entrepreneurial kind of organization. That's the cool thing about it. It's not just going to a banquet, you know, signing up and getting a bunch of stuff at the auction, which I love to do, you know, but it is, you know, signing up for a cleanup. I mean, month of September, we pulled 4,000 bags of trash out of public land just through people going out and organizing people to go out and encouraging them to go out to just pick up trash, whether it was in a organized thing or by themselves. 4,000 bags, man.
Yeah.
And just like kind of like a little fun thing that we did for a month. That's real work.
Yeah.
I mean, all these different public access battles and all the different states we're in, those things don't happen by themselves. And it's almost all organized and driven by membership on the ground. So if you want to like roll up your sleeves and get dirty and fight for something, this is a really fun organization to do it with. And you're going to learn a lot about how to kind of fight in those arenas, which I mean, I think James could tell you all about, but it's a good time, man. We don't just drink beer, though. We do drink a lot of beer. A lot.
It happens, but I've also seen it be like, okay, guys, we got to get the work done.
Yep.
You know, we got to go get this done. We're going to hit it hard. And, yeah. And just the sharing of information too. I mean, learning how to hunt, learning how to fish, sharing of, you know, sometimes it's sharing of spots. Sometimes it's sharing of camp. Like, come to my camp with me and I'll help you learn how to do something.
I mean, do not ask me for a spot. I will not give it to you.
Man, don't be a public land knucklehead.
No. I know. You got to stay away from that. Somebody recorded a podcast about that. And then
I had to write
an article.
And then
it turned into a book.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. No, BHA, they've got a knack for organizing people to do work, man. Mm-hmm. They kind of like made it cool to go out and pick up trash on WMAs and on mm-hmm. public land, and obviously you're just doing so much more than that. But mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Josh, are you a whitetail hunter?
A little bit. I would consider myself a expert whitetail hunter, but I spent a lot of time in tree stands.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Mainly waterfowl though, huh?
Waterfowl is, you know, something that I feel like I call myself a waterfowl hunter in the sense that I feel like I'm confident when I go out that I know what I'm doing to some extent, right? As much as you can in hunting, right?
Yeah,
nothing's ever easy, but that is my passion.
Mallard
for sure.
Duck, top end duck for you?
I mean, my favorite's probably teal.
Oh, really? Yeah. Early season teal?
I don't early season teal hunt as much as in the deeper south. It's, you know, you're just fighting off snakes and everything, and hunting is kind of sporadic.
Y'all see that duck over there on the wall?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a beautiful
duck. I'm a big waterfowler. That's the only mallard duck I've ever killed.
That's a beautiful representation of one.
I mounted the only mallard duck I've ever killed.
Clay, I'm picking up the only duck I've ever killed in my life. I had it mounted, and we're picking it up tomorrow.
Oh, for you?
Yeah, mine. Yeah.
What kind of duck was that?
Wood duck.
Okay.
Which I know a lot of people will be like, oh, wood duck, whatever. It was the first duck I ever shot.
I would mount a wood duck.
They're probably the most beautiful. Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah, man. But I love shooting into teal. I mean, this might be controversial, but my favorite thing to do in the world is shoot ducks. I mean, yeah, and I feel like that's almost, you're not supposed to say that anymore in some circles, but
why?
I don't, that's
I mean, really, what makes you?
Are you single-handedly like collapsing the population? Are you doing it illegally?
No.
Are you following the rules?
I'm following the rules. But man. I mean, I just love it. And but teal are so much fun to shoot in too, and they taste great.
They're fast,
yeah.
Super fast.
Yeah, it's fun.
How
shooting.
How much faster is a teal than a mallard?
I don't know, three times.
Is it really three times?
Yeah.
I don't think that's actually true.
Just the way they come in, man.
They're so close to you when they come in, right? They're a lot.
Maybe that's what it is.
They buzz over you, and they're like, they weren't there, then they're there, and then they're gone.
Mallards kind of lumber in. They're big ducks. They take their time getting down. Teal, like, they're in and out. You know, and they're just hauling.
I've never teal hunted.
We have to change that.
Well, I'd like to try it sometime.
There you go.
James, you killed a buck just the other day.
I did. Yeah. Yes, with my bow.
Man, you're having a great year.
I'm having a fantastic year. I feel amazingly blessed this year. The freezer is full.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't really heard much of the story. I mean.
Well, I was hunting last Saturday. Just got out in the stand before daybreak, had the usual series of mishaps on my way in, got there late, haul rope was tangled up and I couldn't get my bow up, something was underneath my stand, you know, I couldn't see it was still dark, but I finally got settled and, you know, saw a doe and a fawn moving across
the
field.
Where were you at?
This was in Missouri.
That's what I was thinking.
This was on private land in Missouri,
yeah, okay.
My in-law's place up there, so it was bow season up there only.
Yeah.
And, you know, saw a doe and a fawn go across the field, and I was kind of thinking, I mean, I was wanting meat, so I was thought if they came my way, and then I saw the buck behind him, and I thought, okay, this could happen. and the doe and the fawn kind of circled back behind me, and the buck was right on them. I mean, I saw the buck was on them. I made a bad shot. Hit it far back. I knew immediately I'd hit it far back. He trotted off about 20 yards, gave me a chance to look at him through my binos, and he was hunched up. I knew I hit him in the guts, and I was just hoping. Yeah. And so I was very confident that it was a mortal wound.
Right.
I had no idea how long it was going to take. I contacted a blood tracker immediately and got some coaching on what to do.
Okay.
I left it for 8 hours. He got there. We tracked it, found it, jumped it, still alive, but in bad shape. And I eventually, you know, he had to back out with the dog, and I had to go back in with the bow, and eventually was able to finish it off.
Nice.
And it was, oh my gosh, Clay, it was a healthy deer.
It looked big.
I put over 50 pounds of meat away, and the amount of fat that I cut off of that thing.
Huh.
Oh, so much fat. I mean, as dry as it has been around here, I was not expecting that, but he was healthy, healthy deer. So,
is that your first bow kill buck?
Yep.
Nice.
Congrats, man.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, it looked like a big bodied deer.
It was. Yeah, it was a good sized deer.
It's been dry this year?
Up here. Okay. Yeah, up here, right in this area. You get just a little bit south and east of here, and they've had way more rain than we have.
Okay.
Yeah, pastures are burnt up here. My in-laws are talking about having to buy hay and worrying about what kind of water. Now, here this week, it's been wet.
Super wet.
But before that, dry.
Yeah, it's been in northwest Arkansas. I can speak to the horn growth of these deer is exceptional compared to the last 10 years. That's my observation, you know, from the deer that I'm seeing and even hearing people talk about. Yeah, we had incredible horn growth, and that almost always is indicative of a good growing season, which I don't know that down here we've been as dry.
But no, I think you have more rain down here.
Yeah. I'm an hour, well, not quite an hour, almost an hour south of you, though.
Yep. No, you guys have had more rain down here than we have.
I think we have. But no, the deer are healthy. The deer are really healthy.
You're saying... just a minute ago that they're starting to move around, starting to see some rutting activity.
Yeah, I've hunted quite a bit in the last 9-10 days, and just 2 days ago I saw my first big buck chasing a doe. Now the little deer will mess around with does early, and I mean, heck, even in early October.
Sure.
But I mean, a big mature buck that had no business being on his feet unless that doe was serious.
Right.
And so 2 days ago I saw a buck at 3:30 in the afternoon with a doe. And then yesterday didn't get to hunt, but was driving right through a place that I can hunt and saw one of my target deer with a doe in a field, you know, in pouring rain. I mean, it was like a downpour. Wow. And there he is standing in a field with this doe, and they ran off and he lowered his head and just took after, which, man, it's happening. Mm-hmm. Talked to another real good a guy that's been on the podcast, Heath Martin. He told me that what he's seeing is more chasing and rut activity for this time of year than he's seen in a while.
That's what I was telling you. I feel like it's just a little bit early to see the kind of chasing, because I had a better buck under my stand after I shot the one that I shot.
Oh, really? You had a bigger deer come through?
Yep. Not huge, but bigger than the one that I shot. Mm. And he was chasing. And I watched him chase that doe all over the field.
Oh, wow. So that was some legit rut activity.
Yeah.
So are you transitioning now to all day sits? Or
I rarely really get the opportunity to sit all day just because my work is pretty flexible, but I always have something I've got to do.
Right.
So like tomorrow, if something doesn't come up, I'm going to sit all day tomorrow.
Gotcha.
And then Saturday we got some family stuff, but I'm going to hunt morning and evening.
Okay.
You know, in the middle of the day, do some family stuff.
Excellent.
But, yeah, it's time to sit all day if you're going to sit.
This weekend is youth season in Missouri.
Oh, okay.
Youth rifle season. And this October 31st, November 1st time frame has been a really good time.
Are y'all going up there?
Yeah, yeah. Zach's got some stuff going on during the day on Saturday, but as soon as he gets out of that, you know, I have on my list of things, basically get everything ready to whoop, take off as soon as he gets home. And
cool.
And yeah, we'll hunt Saturday night, and he'll probably hunt all day Sunday.
Yeah.
So
good, good. Well, Josh, is there anything else that we've, you know, we kind of just hit, you know, some kind of random things inside of BHA? Anything you'd like to say or
no, man? This was awesome. This was fun. I enjoyed it. It's a great way to end the day.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you for allowing us to come by.
Yeah, man. James?
Man, I'm good.
You're good. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Right on. Well, keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.
Absolutely.
And that's what BHA is trying to do. Keep the wild places wild. They can't steal that tagline.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate Batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate Batteries. I use Interstate Batteries in my boats. I use Interstate Batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.